Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello everyone, welcome back to the Squawker Talker. My name is Nick English and joining me today to, well, review a lot of Premier League football and look ahead to a lot of European football is Mohamed Butt again. Hello, Mo.
Hey, Nick, how you doing?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm fantastic, mate. Love a good pod on Monday.
Yeah, I know you do. It's been good to get you back in more regularly. Also joining us for the first time this season, previous regular Greg Lee. Hello, Greg.
Hi, Nick.
How's it going?
Very well, thank you. Yeah, glad to be back.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. The good thing about Greg is that he lives around the corner, so he just saunters into Squawker HQ like it's nobody's business. Speaking of sauntering, Man City 5, Crystal Palace 0. That's where we're going to start off today. Mo, City are purring right now, scoring goals for fun. Raheem Sterling's playing brilliantly. Kevin De Bruyne's playing brilliantly. David Silva's playing brilliantly. Aguero's looking amazing.
Everyone's
playing amazingly. We've had a question. Axel asks, how long do you think City can keep this up? They've won three games in a row with more than five plus goals in the Premier League. Also, do they even need a DM against the smaller teams? I mean, you could argue that they don't. They just look amazing, don't they?
I mean, Pep's teams always need a DM, but it's not in the traditional sense of like actually defending. They need someone that can initiate plays. I suppose partly when you have John Stones, maybe you don't need that, but you have to play someone at the position. Otherwise, the team shape is all wrong. And this is one thing. I mean, we're saying it so far. They've been okay. They've been amazing. They've been electric. 16 goals scored in the last three games. But first team since the 50s to score 5+ goals in three consecutive Premier League games. You know, and they've been ridiculous. Mm. But you know, there is a weakness there in their transition defense, especially with Fernandinho doesn't play well. Fernandinho is a good player. He's not a great player. Then they need a great player. They Busquets, Lahm, Xabi Alonso, Pep's always had a really good defensive midfielder. Mm. You know, when he didn't have one in Bayern, he moved Lahm there, and Lahm was excellent for him. Mm. He needs someone better than Fernandinho there to play against the truly elite sides. And I think that might prove a problem in the Champions League. Or against better teams in the Premier League. We'll find out this weekend.
Yeah, we'll get to that very shortly because obviously Champions League action is back this week. Yeah. Greg, who's been the standout player for you? We were actually arguing about this in the office earlier. I thought Raheem Sterling's been the standout player for City this season. Who tops the list for you? I know it's like picking your favourite pick and mix at Woolworths, but come on.
Exactly. I'm going to go De Bruyne there. I think slightly different role this season.
That seemed to be the consensus of Scorpio as well.
Yeah, just sensational to watch. His passing, the through balls particularly, so impressive this season. And with the pace they've got up front, you've got plenty of runners onto that. Sterling's been great as well, though. And I think 5 goals now in the Premier League, isn't it? So a player who maybe that end product he was accused of lacking, especially kind of when he has time to think in those finishes. But it's obviously working well for him so far. And another thing about City as well is they've only conceded 2 goals.
Yeah.
They're giving up the fewest shots per game in the league as well. So I agree with Mo on the defensive midfielder. Maybe in bigger games that will become a problem. But at the moment, they're just keeping the play so far away from their own goal that it's been no problem, really.
Defending with the ball, isn't it? That's what Guardiola has always done.
That's if you average 64% possession in the league, you're gonna other teams are gonna struggle to score against you.
Yeah.
Just talking about Palace quickly, another loss, 6 in a row. I know you keep a close eye on the club. We've had a question from one Arsene Wenger, who asks, "What's the quickest a club has sacked 2 managers in the same season? Are Palace gonna challenge that?" Now, I think it's Fulham. When they sacked, I can't remember who it was, but then they sacked McGath after hiring him and then brought in Muhlenstein or the other way around. Hodgson, obviously, playing Man City is a bit awkward. It's a bit of a baptism of fire because next he's got, I think it's Man United he's got
next.
And then
next. Chelsea after that.
And then Chelsea, so things not great for Palace.
No, not at all. Understatement there, I think, as well.
Yeah.
And Benteke now is out for between 6 to 8 weeks, we think, with a knee injury.
Good Lord.
Palace keep on coming.
Yeah. For some reason, they didn't sign a backup striker in the window. Left it to the last minute, tried to get Umanias on deadline day. We'll probably talk about him a bit later. But but that fell through. So you're now looking at a situation where you've got these tough games, you haven't scored a goal yet, and then your only fit centre forward is no longer fit. So
you know how they say teams, there are teams that can score from anywhere on the pitch. Crystal Palace can concede from anywhere on the pitch, it looks like.
Yeah, I still can't figure out why they sacked Frank Nibble when they did, knowing this run of games was coming up. You need the mother of all new manager syndromes to get past it, get through these games with a new coach. Like, they should have just let De Boer take the heat. If he was going to take the heat, he was going to take the heat. Maybe a miracle would happen. He would pull it around. But, you know, then you can sack him and get a new manager in to actually have a fresh start. Hodgson's going to start with three defeats.
Yeah.
You know, it,
or at least leave a caretaker in for...
Well, yeah, maybe even a caretaker. But Hodgson's going to start with three defeats in three games. That's not good for morale. Yeah, City are just a phenomenal side to watch. But there is definitely a sense that the Palace made them look a bit better than they did. Mm. Scott Dan was bad.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, look, it's one thing to get beaten by great players. It happens sometimes. But to let a guy flip the ball over your head in the area, like when Gazza did Hendry, it was like within a space of a 10-yard, you know.
There was a lot of room
Hendry had to cover. He was one-on-one with Gazza.
Mm.
Okay, fine. Dan's in the 6-yard box, like, and there's not much room. And I mean, Sane, it was amazing from Sane. But man, you can't have that happen to you. You can't.
Yeah.
And I mean, then he was terrible. He lost defenders for the other goals. Van Aanholt was awful.
You were compiling the worst team of the weekend and you were struggling not to put in too many.
I honestly wanted to have the entire Palace back line except for Sumensa. Mm. Like Hennessy and then Sacco and then... But I thought, no, you know what? I took Sacco out in the end.
Keep it conservative. Shakhtar Donetsk for City.
Very nice.
Famously tricky opponents. Do we back Pep to get the balance right, Greg? I mean, it's a very pacey team, Donetsk. They typically really like to attack, especially in Champions League, and they love to get a scalp, occasional qualification. Been breezing in the Premier League. Is he going to adopt a different approach in Champions League, do you think?
Possibly, yeah. Maybe another midfielder would come in alongside Fernandinho, Yaya Toure on the bench at the weekend. Fabian Delph came on, who I kind of forgot existed,
what a goal.
Really. And a great goal, late on there. So possibly, but City are at home, so yeah, they obviously have to be wary of that counter-attack, but you still expect them, and Guardiola especially, to play on the front foot and try and cause Shakhtar problems rather than worry about the other way around. So possibly, but again, I wouldn't be that surprised with if he sticks with what's been serving them so well.
I mean, they made mincemeat of final in the last game. I think he'll bring Jesus in for Aguero.
Yeah.
And I think that will probably be the only major change. Maybe he'll switch up a few things. Maybe bring in Bernardo Silva.
It's easier to play on the break if you've got Jesus in your team.
There's so much talent in that squad, especially in attacking areas, that he can afford to be a bit, you know.
A bit experimental.
Yeah.
Leicester City 2, Liverpool 3. Great game, this. Coutinho's back. That didn't take long. Completed 5 take-ons, created 5 chances, got an assist, got a goal. That's exactly what you want from Philippe Coutinho, isn't it, mate?
Mate, that's what Barcelona wanted to pay all that money for. I mean, it's still too much money, but you can see exactly what they wanted for him. Mm. He's a phenomenal player. He lifted in the League Cup game. Well, sorry, the Carabao Cup game midweek against that same match. He was brilliant for the first half. He absolutely bossed it. Liverpool should have gone at least 2 up, maybe 3 up. They didn't take their chances. Coutinho went off at half-time, ostensibly preserving for this game.
Mm-hmm.
And Liverpool, atrocious second half. And this game, you're thinking, okay, Klopp has basically thrown away the League Cup for this game. They have to win it. They have to win it well as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I mean, some bad, atrocious defending aside, they did win it well. They were very good. Mm. Salah looks just... incredible.
Continuous. Explosive, yeah.
He's so good.
He's found his feet.
He really has. And I mean, without Mane in the side to balance him out on the other flank as well. And Coutinho was just unreal. If you look, there's a picture going around on Twitter of Coutinho with the ball at his feet. And you look way, and it's when just before the cross for the first goal, and you have to look way into the background to see Salah out of focus. And you're like, Coutinho saw that on the pitch in real time.
And Salah's pointing at his head.
Yeah.
Being like, go on, mate.
Fizz the ball in. It's unreal.
Find me. I'm only 5'6" or something.
Unreal. And yeah, he was amazing.
Speaking about the defensive issues, Greg, we keep talking about it. Jurgen Klopp after the game was quite honest. He said, what do you want me to do? Get on the pitch and drive the player forward to make sure that he's not offside for Leicester's second
goal.
Worth
a go, isn't it, I guess?
You know, and we've had a question from WhatsApp Ricky who asks, are Liverpool in a low-key crisis because they seem to be able to pick up goals and dominate the play, but we keep talking about it, is that they don't really have a solid defence and they don't seem to have the personnel to be able to change it up and form a solid defence. Is it a bit of a crisis already emerging in this early in the season, at that end of the pitch at least?
Yeah, probably at that end of the pitch. I think there's still need a few more defeats, maybe in a row, to really call it a crisis. But I think the nature of the Premier League now, when it's that established big six, there's always going to be one of them who's deemed to be in crisis at any time. And at the moment, if you're picking a contender, it probably is Liverpool, but that win alleviates some of that. I thought in this game, in the second half, we often point to individual defensive mistakes, which have plagued them for a long time now, but they just lacked control at times as well. They couldn't really take the sting out of that game against Leicester. They allowed them to build up ahead of steam. There was never kind of any, from back to front really, any moments where Liverpool really kind of settled down. They conceded the second straight after they scored the third, for example.
It's really interesting how when you watch Liverpool, they seem to be in total control 1 minute, and the next minute they look completely at sixes and sevens and to have lost all shape.
Exactly, yeah, and I think that's maybe not quite as big a problem as the individual defenders, which clearly, compared to their title rivals or top four rivals, aren't good enough. But at the same time, that's another issue that compounds it, I think.
I thought it was really interesting if you look at, essentially, if it wasn't for Harry Maguire's moment of madness where he charged up the field and tried a 1-2 and gave the ball away, Liverpool wouldn't have scored that third goal. They did it brilliantly. They exposed the gap Maguire left, but without Maguire's massive mistake, they wouldn't have scored that third goal. And Leicester, who knows, might have actually nicked an equaliser.
They might well have done. They've been involved. Both teams have been involved in some pretty crazy games already this season.
Yeah.
Liverpool travelled to Spartak Moscow. Well, they travelled to Moscow to play Spartak Moscow in midweek. Quite a pleasant opponent in an awkward location. It'll pretty much be freezing by the time kickoff comes around, which isn't, you know, horrible for players, but it's more the temperature difference. So they'll probably want to get some training sessions the night before. It's just always awkward going to a very far-flung destination, very passionate home fans. But Liverpool, they've got Mane back for this game. They should win.
It's Moscow in September. It's not October. It's not Moscow in November or December. I don't know if it'll be freezing. The time difference
hasn't
even changed.
It will be freezing. It will be 0 degrees. Okay. Just
well, look at that. I mean, and that's October. So in a way, you're right. It's a tricky venue, but they'd much rather be getting it out of the way now. You don't want to be going to Moscow match day 5 or 6 in November and December when it's minus.
That's a very good point.
And I mean, it's never an easy away game. Spartak have a feisty home crowd, but Liverpool are a better team than Spartak Moscow, and they have Sadio Mane back. You would imagine they'll win this game. They might not play brilliantly, but they would. I mean, they didn't play brilliantly against Hoffenheim in the away leg, and they still won that game. So I think
it's all about the 3 points in the groups.
It really is. They need to, just because after the disappointing draw with Sevilla at home, they need to get on the wagon, get the win. If they do that, then they're laughing really, and I think it's definitely within reach. It's not the most impossible. It's not like they're playing CSKA.
West Ham 2, Spurs 3. This was a total procession, Greg. This was Spurs doing what we know Spurs can do all last season, until Serge Aurier decided to do a Serge Aurier with an absolutely crazy tackle on Andy Carroll. I mean, this is what everyone was talking about when Serge Aurier joins. Like, a cracking player, but he's prone to just having these moments of just not thinking effectively, and he almost cost Spurs the game because they were under pressure for the last 15 minutes.
Yeah, exactly, and one more goal there would have thrown that away, and that would have been a really bad result in the circumstances. West Ham, I don't think they were particularly good in those closing minutes, but they did put pressure on, and with the long balls forward, it can be tough to kind of sustain that lead at one goal lead that they had for the last few minutes, so they came through it. But yeah, as you say, something that Pochettino as well, he's not the type of manager who indulges this type of thing, I think, is he, these moments of madness. So he'll want no repeats from Aurier going forward, I think.
It always seems to be a similar theme, is that when Spurs have everything going for them, it all goes all seems to go well. As soon as something goes a little bit awry, they seem to get rustled. And there was an almighty brawl at the end of the game when it seemed like Llorente came onto the pitch to shore things up, but instead tried to start fights with Winston Reid, which was a bit surreal.
Yeah, it's the problem Spurs have is a lack of leadership, a lack of players who have been there before. I'm surprised Llorente got mixed up in it. I thought he would be a calming influence.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the Spurs thing. I mean, we call it Spursy, whatever you want to call it. They lose their bottle, they lose their composure way too easily. They're too easily rattled. And I think it happened again against West Ham. Okay, fine. You got a red card. Okay, that's never good. But it's West Ham. Yeah. They're not good. They created three chances up with a man advantage. They scored from two of them, but they're not a good team. You can defend and play on the break against West Ham with 10 men.
Yeah.
You know, I don't understand why they always seem to lose their heads, lose their bottle. We say Spursy, but that's so reductive. But it is they're Spurs, isn't it?
You keep doing the same thing over and over again. You know, that's how it's going to get labelled. Harry Kane, wow, Greg. I mean, just... so predictable, doesn't score in August, and all of a sudden he just cannot stop scoring. We had a question from Joey Fourclicks, great name. Who's going to win the Premier League Golden Boot? We've got Aguero, Lukaku, and Morata on six. Harry Kane is catching up quickly, obviously. He's on four. Sterling's on five. Who do you think is going to win it?
I'll go for Aguero, I think. I just think City are going to score so many goals this season, as they've already shown. I saw a stat that they've already scored more goals than Derby County in 2007-08 this season. So
that is correct.
It's pretty astonishing. I think Aguero as well, there'll probably be times where either through injury or rotation, he maybe won't play as many games as Kane and Morata, but I think he'll just score hat-tricks a lot more regularly. And when he does play, he'll score, I think. So I'm going to go for him. But yeah, it could be a really, really good race. And
Mo, what's your going to shout be? Shout going to be?
Well,
sorry.
I set a tip at the start of the season. I tipped Lukaku just because I thought United are going to pummel the weaker sides. I think he'll score a boatload of goals against them. But I did that partly because I didn't think Aguero would have been adapted into the Guardiola system as he has. He's really worked hard over the summer. He's proved me wrong. I was a big critic of him last season. And, you know, Pep's adapted his system to fit Aguero in, but Aguero's also done a lot of good work and he's really playing more Guardiola ball now. It seems to have clicked for him, which is huge because that guy is against weaker teams especially, that guy's an unreal goal scorer. No, he'll be the golden boot now.
Awkward one for Spurs. Apoel away in the Champions League this week. Uncomfortable opponent, one that they really need to beat, though, because the other two teams, Dortmund and Real Madrid, they did the hard work by beating Dortmund at home in the first game. Apoel poses a significant threat. I mean, Spurs need to rotate. They have a habit of having a first 11, and that's kind of it.
Yeah, sorry. I wonder exactly where that rotation will come, because there are positions where you wonder who comes in, and they've been going with a back three lately, haven't they? So maybe one option is maybe shifting to a four and resting one of the centre backs. Maybe Harry Winks came on at the weekend and hasn't really been seen yet through injury, so he could be another who starts. But as you say, it's a game they do need to win, because they'll be in a really good position if they do manage to 6 points.
They'll probably be top.
Yeah, and because they'll have Madrid, obviously, next, won't they? So you kind of pressure's off a little bit heading into that one. Whereas, as you say, if they do drop points here, you're starting to worry again, despite that good win last time out.
Maybe a Llorente start. That would be a rogue move by Mauricio. Stoke 0, Chelsea 4. Main thing worth talking about, Mo, Alvaro Morata, superb performance. We've had a question about this. DreamXXI2 asks, how good will Morata be a successor for Costa at Chelsea? So far, so good.
Yeah, no, he'll be better than Costa, because he won't have the personality issues that basically held Costa back in his second season under Mourinho. Second season under Mourinho. And seemed to have led to his falling out with Conte in the first place. Morata doesn't have those problems. He's a good soldier, to use that kind of language. You know, he does what he's told, but he's also very skilled, very talented. He's young. He's 25 years old. He's not. He's got a lot of football ahead of him. He's not got a lot of miles on the clock. He came through as a teenager, but because he's been used as a sub mostly,
he's not played a lot of games.
I don't think he's ever clocked 2,000 minutes in a league season. So I think that he actually might play on for a while yet at a very good level. I think he could be very good. I think he'll easily break Costa's goal scoring records. He could even, it's early days, but he could even get up there with Lampard as club's top scorer. He's phenomenal. He's well suited to the Premier League. He's well suited
to
being
much quicker than I thought he was.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
For his second goal, he showed absurd pace.
He's a big man as well. Yeah, he's 6 foot two, broad shoulders, very fast, very good in the air. He's basically the perfect Premier League striker. So.
Interesting. Stoke basically made three mistakes and conceded three goals. Then Chelsea brought on Hazard and Fabregas to just take the mick a bit. They completed 94% of their passes between them. Quite indicative of the dimensions that Chelsea have. They've been really careful with bringing Hazard back, Greg. And, you know, Fabregas is just deployed as basically the best sub in the league. Probably something that they can use to good effect during the course of the season.
Yeah, I think Fabregas particularly is an interesting one, because when he was left out when Conte first came to the club, I think everyone just presumed that was the end of his Chelsea career.
Yeah.
If not in January, then in the summer. But that's not been the case at all. And he is so important in certain games. I think away from home, Conte will often prefer the dynamism of Bakayoko. But in tough home games where you may be struggling to break teams down, he's got such an important role to play still. And his passing is great. He can split defences open, and I think he'll still be a really key player this season, even if he doesn't start maybe as much as he'd want.
Yeah, Bakayoko served his purpose, won more tackles than any other Premier League player this weekend. But it's worth mentioning, Mo, that Stoke only had one recognised centre-back available, Martins Indy. But despite the fact they only had one centre-back available, Hughes persisted with three at the back. And then he substituted Martins Indy for Afolai and put Fletcher in the back three alongside Glenn Johnson and I forget who else.
Eric Peters.
So very, I mean, we criticised Wenger for playing players out of position like Kolasinac and Monreal at centre-back.
Yeah.
But Fletcher at right centre-back was, yeah, I mean, he got smoked by...
I really don't know what Hughes was thinking. I mean, it's mad enough playing a back three where you only have one centre-back. Mm. I mean, that's mad enough as it is.
That's Wenger madness.
Well, no, if you're going to dominate the ball as a possession-based team, okay, fine, it's a risk you maybe accept to take, but Stoke were never going to do that against Chelsea. And so to then do that in the first place is mad. Then to take off Martins Indy, you know, you're just sort of thinking, what the hell are you doing?
Mm.
He just invited the trouble. I mean, yeah, you know, they Chelsea only had four shots on target the whole game. They scored from all of them. So it's like... You know, they brought it on themselves almost to a degree. You know, if they played a more organized, disciplined way, they could have got a point out of this game. Maybe
that would have been quite embarrassing for them. Atletico Madrid away next for Chelsea, huge game. They've played each other quite a bit in the past. Atletico Madrid are yet to concede a goal in La Liga in their new Wanda Metropolitan Stadium, which looks almost too modern for a club like Atletico. Yeah. It's a bit weird. There's a chance Diego Costa might be unveiled before the game just to nurdle Conte a bit. How do you expect Chelsea to go into this game? Are they going to go attack, attack, attack and try and catch Atletico early, or is it going to be a really cagey 0-0-esque affair?
Yeah, I think the latter really. I'm quite cagey. I think it might be worth watching the touchline more
yeah,
than the
God,
pitch
that's
for this
two
one.
Two animated managers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that'd be great if they did unveil Costa before, though, wouldn't it? That'd really set it up nicely. But yeah,
dugout cam.
I think a tight game. Maybe, I think if you score in this game, maybe you win it. So
yeah,
it's going to be an interesting one to watch, definitely.
Very interesting, especially as Conte loves a good tactical battle. And, well, Simeone, we know what he's all about.
I'm really actually quite looking forward to it. I think it will be...
I really fancy watching it as well, myself.
It will be defensively excellent. Well, you know, whether or not the attacking is... That depends on what the individual players can perform. But defensively, it should be flawless.
Mm.
Excited to see Griezmann as well. Always fun to watch. Always fun to watch Griezmann.
Anytime he has a touch, he's good to watch. Southampton 0, Man United 1. Very nervy for United, but a huge win. It's one of those classic, you have to win when you're not playing well in order to win the title kind of wins. Lukaku set the tone for how the fans reacted. He was giving it the big celebration at full time, punching the ground, you know, punching his hand, doing a cross, you know, just to, you know, keep things real, then punching the ground again. Fellaini was probably the big question mark in this game. He had very little impact. It seemed like, given how dynamic Romelu and Lamina have been this season, Herrera would have been a better choice, sorry, mate.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is the thing. Fellaini did what you want Fellaini to do, did it quite well. You know, he wasn't bad in and of his own individual performance, but he's not what the team needed. The team needed someone closer to Paul Pogba. Now, of course, you know, Fellaini's literally in height closer to Paul Pogba. I'm pretty sure that's what Mourinho was looking at. I want to retain that height, retain that physical strength. Mm. But what he needed to be looking at was the fact that Paul Pogba is an incredible footballer. And they needed someone who can pass, who can drive the ball through midfield, because they had none of that. Mkhitaryan and Mata were not getting the ball in the areas they usually get the ball in, because Fellaini was passing to them, not Paul Pogba. And Herrera would have been a better start, because...
He's ready to go,
but he's also a good footballer.
Mm.
He knows how to play, you know, he knows how to pass the ball. And Fellaini's amazing, I love him, but he can't pass the ball at all. And yeah, they really missed Herrera in the middle of the park, and it really stunted them, made it easy for Southampton to defend them, frankly.
We mentioned Lamina earlier. He's had a really good start to Southampton career, as many predicted. A really good pickup for Southampton. 85% pass completion rate, 2 chances created, 3 take-ons. At times he was just breezing past Fellaini. I mean, great to watch, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's got kind of every attribute you'd want in a midfielder. He's strong, he can do the defensive side of the game. And as you say, his dribbling and his ability to get up the pitch quickly is really good as well. Good passing.
Mm.
I saw him at Palace the week before as well, and he was brilliant in that game. So another good Southampton signing, which maybe in a few months other clubs will look at and think, why didn't they get there first?
It probably won't be Liverpool signing him, because they've got Naby Keita.
Well, you never know.
You never know. They could just add another, just to make sure Oxlade-Chamberlain stays on the bench. Mourinho was sent off for encroachment. This is really weird.
Yeah.
So we didn't see it initially on the camera angle, but basically you didn't see this, Mourinho was just sent to the stands and everyone was wondering what was going on. Mourinho took ages. He shook every Southampton coach's hand, obviously, before going off, looking glum but respectful at the same time. But the replay showed that there was a Southampton attack from a different camera angle. There was a Southampton attack and he was stepping onto the pitch, right?
Yeah. And so, yeah, it's sent to the stands, but there's no ban, basically. He was sent to the stands and that's it.
Hold, stop. Yeah. Basically, he kept stepping on the pitch, so go up to the stands where you can't step on the pitch.
And they've confirmed today that there's no ban, that he will not face any further punishment. It's just he was sent off and that's it.
Okay.
It seems like it's a really dramatic thing, but it was like, they're just like, yeah, okay, you know, you're fine. You're on about your business.
Don't worry, Jose Mourinho will be on the touchline for the next Man United game. They're going to Moscow as well this week. To play CSKA, Greg, they might share a plane with Liverpool. I doubt it somehow.
Hopefully their flight's not been cancelled by a well-known airline.
Their flight. All respect for not saying the name there. that saves me an edit. It's a bit of an awkward opponent again. We mentioned the temperature conditions before. And they need to rest some players. Do you think Lukaku will be rested for this game? They might try Martial through the middle.
The middle? I think this is a game where if they can score early United, then they'll just play on the counter as much as they can. And Martial up front or Rashford through the middle would serve that purpose really well. So I think Lukaku will be rested, but maybe he'll have to come on if they don't get the job done early on.
And we'll probably see Herrera start in this game, won't we?
I think Herrera will start. I think Lukaku will start this game. I think it'll be Lukaku will start the game. I think Martial will get the start and Rashford will come off the bench as a way to flip it from the league game where Rashford started and Martial come off the bench.
Right.
I think Herrera will start. I don't think he'll rest too many players because he knows if you get... It's an easy group United have, obviously, but if you get 6 points, six out of six, that sets yourself up quite nicely for the doubleheader.
Yeah.
Winning away in Moscow, you know, if you win your three home games, you get 9 points. You win one of your away games, that's 12 points. You're qualified. So, you know, and the first away game, get it out of the way, get the win, then you can basically, the last two games are dead rubbers almost, you can rest your players. So
Mourinho knows the drill here.
Yeah, he knows how to qualify. United haven't been in a difficult group necessarily. CSKA aren't... They're not the easiest team in the world, but I mean, they're not what they were. So
yeah. Awkward opponents.
Yeah, we know the temperature in this part of Moscow. Is it the same, Nick?
It is more or less the same.
Right. Okay.
Yes, I only check the Moscow area, not the greater metropolitan Moscow area. I'm not maybe the if you're Russian and you're listening and you want to correct me on the climate. I assume wind chill's a factor as well. I didn't check wind chill. That was a mistake on my part. I feel
you know what you're doing after the pod now. Then
I'm getting straight on and straight onto I don't know what website I would check, but there you go. Everton 2, Bournemouth 1. Umar Nias, Greg. Umar Nias, proper redemption story. We love one of those in the Premier League. It's taken him just 59 minutes to become Everton's top scorer this season. We had a question in from Mr. Walker Porter. He asks, is Nias the striker Everton needed all along? What does he offer him that Everton didn't have?
Well, he is a striker for a start, isn't he? Which helps because I've seen him in a few of these away games, particularly where they've had Sandro, Rooney, Sigurdsson, and the lack of pace there is quite startling. So someone who can run for a start is...
It's pace, isn't it?
Yeah, but good finishes as well at the weekend. And yeah, really great redemption story because he wasn't just kind of left out of the team, was he? He was really frozen out of the hole.
Banishment.
Set up there, yeah. So
banishment is the word that I'd go for.
Good word, yeah. I'll go with that. But great story, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was told to train with under-23s. He wasn't given a locker with the first team. He was sort of cast off to Hull, like, whatever, dude.
It was probably like what Van Gaal did to Valdes. It's like, man, calm down.
Easy.
He went scorched earth with it, man.
Umar's got feelings.
Yeah, he does have feelings. But, you know, he's also got qualities, as we saw at the weekend, you know, two very well taken. He's got good striker's instincts. That's what you have to say about him. You know, and that's part of the problem Everton have is they don't have any number nines with really good instincts. Like, Sandro has a very good physical skill set to play striker and a good technical instinct. But it's about whether or not his ruthless touch is really there. Sandro does a lot of work for the team. Okay, very good. Rooney doesn't have any physical skill sets left whatsoever. Has the technical stuff in there somewhere. Mentally not really sharp. You know, Nias is a genuine, he's a goal scorer. You know, you could see him almost playing off like Giroud if they were ever to get Giroud. You know?
Well, the rumours are they're going back in for him in January.
You can understand why. You know, they need a striker. They need a big number nine. But, you know, Nias is good. Nias will do well for them in the meantime. They start playing Calvert-Lewin a bit more as well. You know, actually get some pace and movement up front in the team when Yannick Bolasie comes back, whenever that is, I don't know. You know, it's not the end of the world for Everton. They had a very tough start to the season. Yeah. And this kind of scrappy, gutty, just win-win sort of thing, with, along with Nias rediscovering his status at the club. That could be what they need to get the season going.
Yeah, it's exactly what they needed against a Bournemouth side that were throwing everything at it, to be honest. The Toffees face Cypriots Apollon Limassol next in the Europa League. Greg, how much do you know about Limassol and how tricky it might be for Everton?
Not a great deal, I must admit. But
you're not alone in that.
Yeah, a must win really, though, because it's a tough group with Atalanta and Lyon as well. So if they want to go far, then... need a win here, really.
Swansea 1, Watford 2. A dramatic finish to a pretty tense game. Two highly tactical managers, Mo. Yeah. Swansea, unusually, maybe a bit surprisingly for some, opted for quite a long ball approach. Wilfred Bony ended up contesting more aerial duels than any other player in the Premier League this weekend.
Yeah.
It was pretty much spoils, even honours. But Richarlison got a late winner. Watford get the win.
Yeah.
And they'll be much, much happier today than Swansea fans.
Yeah, I liked Andre Gray's goal. I liked his, instincts, you know, just to follow through and, you know, end up on the end of a deflection. You know, got there, good finish as well. Tammy Abraham, you know, it's good to see Tammy Abraham score. It's good to see him get chances.
He's
a really good player. He needs the run of games in a side. I mean, it's interesting that Paul Clement, for me, has stopped playing Roque Mesa and only used Renato Sanchez as a sub, perhaps indicating that, not that he's given up on the, but he understands that you have to adapt to the Premier League first. It takes it doesn't happen immediately, takes a bit of time. And with Renato Sanchez, especially, he's a young player, you know, a lot of hype, a lot of expectations surrounding him. It makes sense to take it slow with him. Matt went back to what you said about Chelsea. Look at how they're taking care of Hazard. They're bringing him back. Everyone knows Eden Hazard's world class. They're just taking their time with him. So he doesn't have any expectations. If he performs, great. If you're not, he's only coming off the bench for the last 15 minutes of games anyway.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
They've been very sensible with that. I think Paul Clement's now clocked and is starting to do the same thing with Renato Sanchez and Roque Mesa.
Good idea. Brighton 1, Newcastle 0. Houghton lovers unite. I know there's a lot of you out there. Brighton score a goal Pascal Gross isn't involved in. Historic moment. Newcastle had 17 shots to Brighton's 7. Greg, Rafa Benitez getting a bit of a taste of his own medicine there.
Yeah, and I think Houghton will look to do the same throughout this season, especially at home. These 1-0 home wins will be maybe the difference between them staying up or not, depending on how many they get. I think there'll be a lot of games where they get outshot, but if they can get that goal, Houghton likes to keep things really tight if he can and play quite conservatively, and it works on this occasion. So,
do you back them to stay up? Because you look at the personnel they've got, there's not a lot of players that you would normally associate with being Premier League quality.
Yeah.
Not always an indicator, but do you think that's a squad that can, and the way Houghton's got them drilled, could stay up?
I think they could. I still tip them to go down, I think, but they'll be competitive. I don't think they'll be cut adrift. They'll give it a good go. But yeah, I think ultimately that lack of quality and proven Premier League quality especially is going to do for them.
Final result from the weekend, Burnley 0, Huddersfield 0. I felt a bit bad after the Friday pod because I didn't really give it much of a preview and I was like, this one's going to be really boring. Yeah. And I was fretting before the kickoff. I was like, oh, what if it turns out to be a 6-5 stunner? It was not.
Yes.
Because Sean Dyche named the most defensive formation I think I've ever seen, a 4-6-1 with I think 6 centre midfielders in there. Both managers probably very happy with this, Mo. They'd like this result. It's a point for both of them.
I think
them ticking over.
I think Dyche might like to win because they're at home. But I mean, clean sheet. You know, I think you wouldn't be monstrously upset with that. Although, really, I do think Burnley picked up a couple of big away wins already. So it's, you know, a home point at home, not the end of the world. Huddersfield, yeah, clean sheet, point away from home at a difficult away ground. You know, Moy looking really good. Created 4 chances, I think.
Chances, despite the fact there's a million people in midfield.
Yeah, you know, so Huddersfield are doing much, much better than anyone could have imagined. You know, I honestly didn't think they'd do anything like this. I thought they'd be relegated. I thought Brighton would do well. Flip it around, man. Huddersfield would have been great. So, yeah, this is not the most exciting thing, but good for both clubs.
Let's move on to today's fixture. Arsenal versus West Brom, Monday Night Football, which is a mere few hours away. Greg, it's basically Gareth Barry's coronation as the Premier League most experienced player is going to get to 633 appearances. Anything you'd like to share with the Squawker Talker listeners about Gareth Barry?
I like Gareth Barry, I have to say.
Who doesn't like Gareth Barry?
Yeah, he's a solid kind of Premier League player, and that's a great record. And I think it's 601 of those have been starts. So if you compare him to Diggs, obviously latterly in his career, it was very much off the bench, cameo appearances, and great record still for Diaz, not criticising that, but the fact Barry is almost plays the 90 minutes, starts the games, it makes it even more impressive, I think. But he's still, I think he's 40 behind Diaz if you count in, if you take into account the first division appearances.
So, oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting. So he's got, he's probably going to make that though as well,
probably
isn't he?
Probably will, yeah. Just that consistency.
Maybe, you think so, but he's, he is starting to look his age now. I mean,
He was never fast, but now.
Fun, yeah, it's funny to say, honestly, you, the one thing I would say to Tony Pulis ahead of Gareth Barry's special day is don't play Gareth Barry. don't play him, man. I mean, you know.
Against
you,
Ramsey, that's well, cruel.
Exactly. You don't want to give Arsenal. I mean, sentiment is great and we all love Gareth Barry. He's a very nice professional, doesn't really offend anybody. You know, except when Gerrard thought he could replace Xabi Alonso. What the hell was that? But, you know, besides that, no, we all like Gareth Barry, but Arsenal will kill Gareth Barry if he plays. I mean, not literally, obviously, but, you know, it's, you know, Granit Xhaka and Aaron Ramsey in particular will thrive off Barry's lack of mobility. Mm. I mean, you know, he's so immobile. Granit Xhaka, a lot of Usain Bolt out there. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's not a good look. If they start Gareth Barry, they need to bring on Koscielny. They need to bring some strength and solidity to their midfield and add a bit of creativity. And Gareth Barry's not creativity. Yeah. You know, they need to have a solid base and then they can spring forward and attack from that. Because if they just try and sit and defend for 90 minutes, what will happen is, yeah, they'll stifle Arsenal for 70 minutes. Then Giroud will come off the bench and score a goal. Mm. And then they'll be like, oh, well, what was the point of all that defending? You know, so they need to actually try and take the game to Arsenal because that's where they can actually get some joy.
We've actually had a question from one Arsene Wenger who asks, will we ever see Sanchez, Lacazette, Ozil? Welbeck's injured. Sanchez, he played 90 minutes in the EFL Cup, but he's had a good five-day rest. Ozil's back in contention. Lacazette's fit. Is this finally going to be Arsenal's, you know, three record transfers playing together on the same pitch up front in this 3-4-2-1 formation?
Yeah, I hope so. It'd be good to see, and I think this is the perfect game really to do it. I can kind of see why at the game at Chelsea, obviously was concerned with Chelsea's threat, but I don't think that's going to be as big an issue in this game. So yeah, I think possibly tonight. And they've just got to use Sanchez really, haven't they? Because I know maybe Wenger wants to make a point about his desperation to move in the summer, but he's probably going to go in 12 months, isn't he? Or less than that, so...
Yeah.
Make the most of it while he's here.
Regardless of that, this is kind of a must-win game for Arsenal and Wenger. He can't drop any more points right now.
No, they tend to be really good in this type of game against West Brom and Pulis sides at home anyway. So, yeah, I can't see them dropping points here.
Okay, well, let's move on to the Champions League. It's back again. Picked out a nice couple of ties for us to look at. I'm sure you're going to enjoy the menu. Borussia Dortmund versus Real Madrid. Woof. Dortmund with 19 goals this season in six games. They've conceded just one in the Bundesliga. They are flying high. And they'll want to make up ground after losing to Spurs. And their home form is ridiculous.
But this is the thing. They're very good at home. They're a great attacking side. And yet, if they don't win this game, they might struggle to qualify.
Which is bizarre.
It's bizarre. But, you know, they've got a double. We had to come up against Apoel, so you know you'd figure that's 6 points there for them probably. Mm. But that means they'll have 6 points if they don't win this game. You know, which I mean, if Spurs take anything off Madrid, which is unlikely, but if they take anything off Madrid, they're at a disadvantage. Mm. And okay, they get to welcome Spurs match day five. But they need to win this game. They need to at least get a point from this game. You know, last season they did get a point. Not last season, 2 seasons ago, when they played Real Madrid, they got a point. They got a 2-2 draw, and it was. Okay, fine, great, but they only got that draw because Real Madrid were, I mean, how should we say this? They just didn't take advantage of the chances they had. They were walking through the defence. You know, they need to be clinical and solid in defence as they have been so far this season. They need Aubameyang to take his chances.
Real Madrid have been in pretty poor form overall. They just look a bit uninterested and complacent. But they have a really good record away from the Bernabeu this season, strangely enough. Ronaldo is fit and available. That'll be obviously a massive boost for them. Will it be a case of Dortmund are just going to go all guns blazing in the first 15 minutes? I can't envisage any other scenario.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's one of those games where you can probably tell who maybe is favourite to win after those first 15 minutes. If Dortmund get ahead, then you probably fancy them to push home that advantage. But if Madrid can stay in that time of the game, then the counter-attacking threat they possess, especially, then they've obviously got the quality to take advantage of that. But yeah, this should be a really interesting game. And the games last season were really watchable. So hopefully more of the same.
It could be a bonkers scoreline if there's an early goal.
I think it definitely could be. Madrid have had problems defending this season as a whole. Dortmund have always, I mean, they've got a good record in the Bundesliga, but they've, you know, their defenders can be ropey. We saw they didn't, they let Spurs in three times for crying out loud. I mean, even if nothing
else, looks a bit shaky.
If nothing
as well.
Else, yeah, I was gonna say nothing else. They have Berkey in goal, who can't seem to handle powerful shots, and he's playing facing Cristiano Ronaldo. So good luck, good luck with that, Roman. You know, it's gonna be. I think it'll be a really fun game. I think it'll be great fun to watch.
Okay, let's move on to PSG versus Bayern Munich. PSG with a very unexpected draw against Montpellier at the weekend, and there's all this stuff going on with Neymar and Cavani, and you know, whatever. Let's talk about that in a second. Quickly on Bayern, they find themselves third in the Bundesliga. These are two coaches who are tactically exceptional in Europe and noted for it. What can we expect in terms of how this game is going to pan out, Greg? In your opinion, do you think it's going to be one team really trying to aggress early on, or is it going to be sort of a tactical affair, a bit of a game of chess?
Yeah, I think possibly the latter, particularly because both teams, despite having great attacking players, have not quite found their rhythm in a collective sense going forward, neither side. I think there's been a lot of games under Ancelotti as a whole last season as well, where Bayern have maybe not looked as fluent as they should. James Rodriguez came in recently. I saw the game against Schalke last week in midweek, and he was brilliant. So maybe he's the guy who can kind of knit things together for them in this game. And yeah, it should be an interesting one, and one where if you win this, then you're in good position for first place in that group.
Mo, it seems like a game that's going to be defined by individual brilliance.
Yeah.
I mean, Greg mentioned James Rodriguez. Neymar's going to come back. He didn't play against Montpellier at the weekend.
His foot was injured, apparently.
Yeah, his foot was in, he was not being rested for the Champions League at all. And all of a sudden, PSG didn't seem as fluid. But, I mean, Neymar, Mbappe, Cavani, there's goals there.
Well, yeah, I mean, if they can all get along with each other, sure. You know,
do you think that's what's happening? They just don't get along?
Well, I mean, if their price report is to be believed, I mean, they're a pretty reliable outfit usually. Neymar and Cavani are not really getting on well at all. Neymar as a whole is at odds with the rest of the squad. A lot of the squad, because he's earning so much money, he's got this kind of aloof demeanor. It's what I worry would happen actually when he went there. I thought without responsible and solid leadership ahead of him, he's going to let it get to his head a little bit.
But you thought Thiago Silva would be
but
the
he's
guy
not, though,
to
is
sort
he?
Of...
He's kind of a soft mercenary, if we're being honest. Thiago Silva, he's a very good defender, but he's never been like a leader of men. I mean, his record as Brazil captain, lest we forget, you know, not the best. And he ducked out of the 7-1 with that yellow card, and then everyone thought, oh yeah, fine. And then he was rubbish against the Netherlands in the third place playoff. But look, PSG have got amazing individual quality. If all their players show up and they all click, which, you know, I mean, players that don't like each other have played well together before. I remember Andy Cole, Teddy Sheringham. So not liking each other shouldn't stop Cavani. And they're both brilliant. And they're both complementary players as well. Neymar's probably second best player in the world. Cavani is an amazing striker, albeit one with a dodgy bit of finishing. So I think PSG have got a really good chance. They're Bayern in disarray, both on and off the field, whereas PSG are just in disarray apparently off the field. So
yeah,
they've got less problems.
It's weird when your new 19-year-old sent wonder kid Mbappe is the one making you is the one looking mature.
The ordinary
all,
one,
in
right?
all of this, right? one bit of news that's just come out this afternoon is that Tom Stark has come out of retirement to enter Bayern's Champions League squad because Neuer's out until the new year, which is when they renew the Champions League squad. So
yeah. Reminds me of when Lehmann came back for Arsenal. Do you remember that?
Exactly,
Blackpool, I think it was.
So he's just going to be a backup. So if there's another injury at Bayern, that could be awkward. Any other games we're looking forward to in the Champions League, particularly that we might not have mentioned?
Atletico Chelsea, I think, will be very. Very hard fought. You know, and honestly, bizarrely, I am kind of quite looking forward to seeing Liverpool and Moscow. Mm. I just want to see how he reconciles Coutinho with that front three. I want to see how that works together. I think if they put it, because in the midfield three with that front three, I think that could be the makings of something very special, although they probably need a bit of defensive midfielder than Henderson to work it out. But I would just like to see that.
Okay. Greg?
There's Monaco Porto, which is obviously a rerun of that.
Hipster's choice.
Yeah. But that group is really tight because it's Besiktas against Leipzig as well, the other tie. So I think any two teams from that group can go through, which you can't say for many of the groups. So interesting games there.
And of course, Barcelona have Lionel Messi, so that'll always be nice.
Yeah. It's always fun to watch Lionel Messi in the Champions League because he's the best player of all time, so that's good. Q&A time to wrap up the pod. We all love good Q&A, and our listeners always send in fantastic questions. Greg and Mo, get ready. Gaurav Burai asks, this is a bit of an oddball one to start us off. Who is the better signing, Danilo, Aurier or Zappa Costa? Greg, I'll come to you first.
I think they all do different roles, and I know they're the same position.
They're
but they
all
were signed for different,
but very different ones.
Yeah, and they were signed for different reasons, weren't they? Some were backup, some were kind of utility man in Danilo's case. And I'd say Aurier, because I think Tottenham did need an upgrade there. So.
Okay.
Oh, I say Zappa Costa. I think he's a phenomenal signing. You've been ranting, raving about him. He's an incredible crosser. Like, I think only Candreva is a more prolific crosser in Serie A, a more better crosser than him. The last few years, I think he's.
I must say, I am partial to a player with one very specific talent.
He's a wonderful crosser. His name even fits with Zappa.
Zappa Costa.
You know, and Morata's a great hitter of the ball. I think Zappa Costa will prove to be the best. He's still adapting, but
we'll see.
End of the season, I think he'll prove to be the best signing.
Aurier's made a good start, but we'll see. Kurt Simpson asks, which Premier League team will do best in the Champions League this year? We asked this a few weeks ago, but I think it's worth asking again now. We've had about another three or four Premier League games. We've had one round of the Champions League. Who do we think is going to go the furthest this year?
I think United. I think City... City, I think, they could still be vulnerable in the biggest games, as we were saying earlier, in defending those transitions, the counter-attacks. Still, maybe that could be their undoing. Conte's record in the Champions League isn't great. Not a huge sample size, but maybe that will prove the case again. And I just don't think Liverpool are as good a team. Tottenham. But, I'd go for United.
United as well. Spurs aren't good enough, and they have issues at home. Liverpool can't defend. City, Chelsea. I mean, Conte's terrible in the Champions League. I mean, if he steps it up, if he improves the ability wise, Chelsea could go as far as United, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Conte just has issues with knockout football. I don't think he'll come to Bayern. And the City, as Greg said, defending transitions. Fernandinho is not good enough, and that we found out when they play elite sides. If they get an easy draw like Madrid in 2016, maybe they could go far. But without an easy draw, they're in trouble.
Nandan has asked, why don't Italian managers show faith in youth and play defensive tactical football? Greg, I'm going to come to you on this because I know you're a big fan of Serie A. This question seems maybe
a bit loaded.
Yeah, a bit loaded.
Also, wait, is he saying that Italian managers don't play defensive tactical football? Or
no, they play defensive tactical football and they don't show faith in youth.
Right. Okay.
I'm not sure this is 100% fair. I mean, maybe you could argue it with Conte to a certain degree.
Yeah, but if you look at someone like Maurizio Sarri at Napoli, probably the most entertaining team to watch.
Yeah.
I think, though, it's an interesting point historically about the defensive football because there's a guy, Gianni Brera, who was the editor of Gazzetta in the 1950s and beyond that, and he had such a big influence on Italian football. And he kind of believed that Italians, particularly after the war, were just culturally and ethnically not physical enough, not kind of good enough to beat other teams with athletic qualities. So he kind of really emphasises focus on strategy, which is where it lays. And there's a really good book, The Italian Job, by Gabriele Marcotti and Gianluca Vialli, where again it talks about this inferiority complex that Italy historically has had, partly because of their kind of outside of football as well. Lots of invasions by foreign powers, that type of thing. And that is perceived to kind of be part of the reason why Catenaccio sprang up. So I think there definitely historically is that kind of mindset. Try and stop other teams first, protect yourself. But I think now it's maybe a bit of an overgeneralization to say Italian coaches.
It's really unfair. If you watch Serie A, there's a lot of great attacking stuff going on. Milan are not a defensive team, for instance. Yeah. Inter, not a defensive team.
Spalletti, Inter's doing some business.
Spalletti pioneered the false nine in Europe, brought it back. Youth is an interesting... I think that is a valid point. I think Italian managers don't tend to play what we would call youngsters. To them, a youngster is someone who's 21, 22, 23 even sometimes. And part of the reason Verratti said he went to PSG was because he knew he wasn't going to get a chance in one of the top sides in Italy because he was 18 at the time, or 19, I think. They don't play teenagers, but that's just because they believe players develop at a different rate, or they like to develop players at a different rate. Whether that's good or bad, I mean, Italy have had plenty of success over the years, and even now, frankly, it's starting to change. You're starting to see more teenagers break through in Italian sides, it's starting to get more games, so the attitudes are starting to change. And regarding defensive football, I completely agree with Greg. It's a stereotype that isn't really applicable anymore.
That might be one of the most well-answered questions we've ever had on the Squawker Talker. Well done, the both of you. Last question from... I think I've included this question just because of the name. Sandwich Dad.
His name today.
Sandwich Dad asks... I mean, he might... I'm tempted to change my name to that by Deed Poll. It's that good.
That is a great name.
Sandwich Dad asks, which of the metrics for studying a player's performance is the most overrated, i.e. total passes, touches, etc.? I mean, he's just listing metrics. He's not saying it's those. Obviously, we have the performance score at Squawk, which is an on-ball statistical algorithm. Let's look for just two opinions from two of our guests. This isn't necessarily saying it's the truth. Greg, in your estimation, what's the most overrated metric that people look at?
I think a thing with lots of these metrics is they're descriptive, a lot of them, rather than definitively saying a higher number means they're a better player. So I think not so much the stat itself, but pass completion can sometimes be misinterpreted as a high number equals a good passer. But in reality, you have to see if they were the right passers, and maybe it can be an indication of someone being overly cautious and safe with their distribution. So
or
I would say that.
Formational thing as well.
Yeah.
Mo?
Distance covered.
Distance covered.
Absolutely
we're,
nothing.
You're entering choppy waters here because nobody knows how it's measured.
Distance covered or, okay, sprints, with the number of sprints. Just one, and they mean absolutely nothing. Messi routinely covers less desk ground than goalkeepers, for instance. It doesn't mean anything. It's about when you move, in where you move, you know, the right areas. Running more, it's this British thing that British football, if you run more, that's great. Sky always bring it up that they've covered more ground, so they've worked harder. That doesn't necessarily mean that they've worked harder. It just means they've run across more ground. That's not...
What's the Johan Cruyff quote? Because I start 2 yards earlier, I look much faster than... I look 10 yards faster than my opponent. He probably didn't use yards, though.
The first 5 yards is in your head. You know, that's what Teddy Sheringham always used to say. You know, he was never quick, but he appeared to be quick because he could anticipate things. You know, it's the idea that physical distance covered is in any way or shape or form illustrative or indicative of anything is just a joke.
It's a joke. Everyone,
be sure.
It's a joke. It's just not a very funny one. And that's all. That's all we've got time for on the pod this Monday. Thank you very much to Mo for joining us. Mo, where can people find you?
Mohamed Butt on Twitter and Mohamed Butt on Facebook actually as well.
Yeah, for all the hottest takes you could ever imagine.
Oh, I'm on those, baby.
Greg Lee, thanks for joining us. Where can people find you?
At Greg Lee Football on those two platforms as well. So
fantastic. So Greg Lee Football, Mohamed Butt, thank you so much. Before we leave, need to mention Defending in Numbers, a Deezer original podcast which is made by the creators of The Score Talker, which is us, believe it or not. Subscribe, check it out on iTunes or Stitcher or Audioboom or wherever you like to get your podcasts. In the meantime, why don't you drop us a subscribe as well? Thanks very much for joining us, and we'll see you soon. Bye bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.